Okay, then let's turn to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37, and this morning we are working with verses 2 through 36, so essentially the whole chapter. So Genesis chapter 37, starting at verse 2. Genesis 37, beginning at verse 2. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty, there was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, he said, in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son. So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this day, and we thank you for your presence amongst us, your ministry to us already. And as we stop and as we come before your word, we pray that you would speak afresh to us. Help us to hear you. Help us to receive you, obey you. We pray that you would have your way amongst us. In Jesus' name we ask, amen. Well, this is the beginning of the Joseph story. And the Joseph story runs all the way through chapter 50 to the very end of Genesis. And last week I told you my temptation was to skip chapter 36. Well, this week my temptation is to skip to the end of the story. And it's the beginning of a story that stretches over a few chapters, and it is so tempting to just get right to the end of it. Many of you have heard the story. Many of you know how the story ends. I'm going to do my best not to jump to the end of the story, but to make us settle in here in chapter 37 for this morning. And we know the end of the story is coming. We know what happens with Joseph down in Egypt. We know what happens with his imprisonment and where he rises to and all of that good stuff. But we're going to try to stay focused here on kind of this episode of the story. I need to say a couple of other words, kind of preliminary. It's also tempting to think of this as Joseph's story. But we are reminded in that very first line at verse 2 that this is the account of Jacob. So this is not simply Joseph's story. This is the account of Jacob and the generations that come from him, especially his sons. And Joseph was not the only son. So this really isn't simply a story about Joseph, but it's a story about the sons of Jacob. And the interaction that takes place becomes the focal point, what goes on between Joseph and his brothers. But these are all the sons of Jacob. And so this is Jacob's story, not just one son's story. The other preliminary mark that we need to keep in mind is that this is in the larger context of the promise that God made to Abraham. And you may or may not recall, but the promise to Abraham was that I will give you children, I will give you land, I will make you a great nation, I will be with you. But the bottom line of all of that promising was that I will bless all peoples through your offspring. And so this promise is kind of the promise that God keeps working at fulfilling as we move through Genesis. And this promise of working through Abraham to bless all peoples, you know, kind of taking one step further back, this is God's solution to what has gone wrong with humanity in those first 11 chapters of Genesis. And so we know that when God created, everything was very good. And we know that Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, and we know that that unleashed sin and curse clear through creation and clear through humanity. And so we saw episode after episode where things just got worse and got worse because of the sinfulness of humanity. And so God's response to this problem of sin, this problem of humanity being so broken and so corrupt and the damage done to creation, God's solution was Abraham. And so God calling Abraham and Sarah, this barren couple that had no future, and God promising them to make them into a great nation, but not just a great nation, but through their offspring to bless all peoples. And so here we are Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and now the children of Jacob, the sons of Jacob, and especially focusing on the relationship of those sons to each other, and in particular to Joseph. And this is the family that God is going to bless all families through. And yet look at these relationships. What a mess. That's what we're going to try to do, is to just see what a big mess it is. So look with me back to chapter 37, and we're just going to kind of start walking through this. And we meet Joseph, a young man, 17 years old. And as we read through, I just want to point a few things out to you. Joseph, a young man, 17 years old, tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. Now, you may or may not recall, but Jacob, also known as Israel here, had four wives. He only wanted one, Rachel. And he thought he was getting Rachel, but instead he got her older sister that apparently nobody wanted. And so now he has two wives, and this contest develops as to who can have kids, who can give kids. And so the older sister, Leah, God blessed her with the ability to give Jacob children, and in particular sons, plus one daughter, and we'll hear more about her next week, or in days to come. But God blessed her with the ability to give children, and she thought she would win Jacob's love because she blessed him with children. And he didn't love her anymore for it. And Rachel, who had the love of Jacob, was unable to give kids. And so she was incredibly jealous of her older sister. So what she tried to do was to give Jacob kids through her servant girl. And so Jacob had some sons through Rachel's servant girl. And so Leah, the older sister, she had stopped having kids, but in the competition, she didn't want to fall behind. And so she gave her servant girl to Jacob. And that's how he ended up with four wives. And so he ends up having, altogether, he'll have 12 sons. We don't meet the youngest one here yet. And he also had one daughter. And apparently some other daughters as well, but only one of them got mentioned. Now, what I want you to see here is that while they are brothers, they have different mothers. And there's incredible jealousy amongst the brothers, and especially against Joseph, because Joseph was the son of the wife, Rachel, that Jacob loved. Okay, you with me on that? I know that got kind of tangled. So he's grazing, he's a shepherd with these older brothers from different mothers. And there's incredible strife and jealousy and rivalry there. And so we begin to see this play out here. So notice he's with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. Those were the maidservants. And Joseph brought their father a bad report about his brothers. At one level, it sounds like the typical little brother thing. Little brother catches big brothers doing some things that they shouldn't be doing, and so little brother is going to tell dad about it. And the language here, we don't even know if he's telling the truth. Being an older brother, I kind of assume he's not. But it's kind of left open there. It's just a bad report. It's an evil report. It could be a report that he contrived. It could be the truth. But either way, what does that do? It just deepens the division. And then we see that the division runs really deep. Look at verse 3. Now Israel, the father, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. It was in his old age that Rachel finally gave birth to a son, Joseph. And Israel, the dad, loved him more than all the others. So you can just see this thing kind of playing out to where this is the favorite son of the father. And so that son really tries to use that over against his brothers that are really only his half-brothers. They come from different mothers. Look at the language here. He made a richly ornamented robe for him, and when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. You could even pencil in where it says a kind word. They could not speak peace to him. And so the father must have been a fool. He has a favored son, and what does he do? He makes him a special piece of clothing. We don't know whether the best way to understand this is that it is kind of a multicolored garment, jacket, or whether it was a garment that was like a robe and it had long sleeves and came all the way down to the ankles. But there was something special about this garment that Jacob had given Joseph to set him apart as his favorite son amongst all the other sons. And so every time Joseph puts that on, what does that do to his brothers? It reminds them that they're less loved. And it just stirs up the rivalry and the jealousy in them. And it's Joseph kind of parading around in front of them that, hey, I'm special, my dad loves me. He doesn't really love you. So he's wearing this, and they hate him for it. And they hate him because their dad loves him more. And they can't speak a word of peace to him. Now, look what happens next. Joseph has a dream. And I want you to see the way that the story gets told. Look at verse 5. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. And then look at the end of verse 8, and they hated him all the more because of his dream, what he had said. Okay, so do you see kind of the order of this? He had a dream, they hated him, then he tells a dream, they hate him because he has a dream. So you have this language of dream, hate, hate, dream. I mean, it's just emphasizing the hatred. And it's emphasizing that the hatred grows because of the dream that Joseph shares. And so just in this span, we find out that they hate him more, they hate him more. What was the dream? Well, the dream was that we were working together in the field and we were bundling up sheaves. And the sheaves would be kind of the produce of the land, and they would cut it down and then they would bundle it up, and eventually they take that in as the harvest. And so here in the middle of the field, with their each one of them has their sheaves, his sheaves miraculously kind of stands up, and then the others gather around and bow down before it. And notice that the brothers don't need anybody to interpret the dream for them. They know exactly what Joseph is saying. He's saying to his older brothers that the day is going to come when you are all going to bow down to me. No wonder they hate him. And then he has another dream. And this dream, it's as if he is a star, and there's 11 other stars, and now there's the sun and the moon, and the sun and the moon and the 11 stars all bow down before him. And he tells them that dream, probably with his coat on, just letting them know, I'm loved and I'm special and you're not. And he even tells his dad about this one. And his dad rebukes him for it. See, he has these dreams and they all know what the dream means. They know what he's saying. And so his father says, do you really think that I'm going to bow down to you as your dad? And that your brothers are going to bow down to you and that your mom is going to bow down to you? Do you really think that? Surely not. And the brothers hear it and notice their reaction. Jealousy. Jealousy is stirred up within them. Now when you got triple fold hatred and jealousy going on, and somebody like Joseph who's doing very good at pulling it out of you, something's going to happen. But also notice the response of the father. He kept the matter in mind. See, we might ought to pause here to talk for just a moment about dreams. In the ancient world, dreams were considered kind of messages from God, kind of revelation. That God is making the future, that God is making God's self or God's will, God's plan, known in and through the dream. And so it really becomes kind of an abrasive thing to try to get your mind around. Is God really saying that we're going to bow down to you, Joseph? Or Joseph, is this just you and your imagination and your ego, and it's really not from God? And so that's why the father kind of keeps these things in mind, and that's why the brothers are so against it. Surely this can't be God's plan. It's one thing for our father to favor you, but for God to favor you, that's hard. I don't know about dreams. Honestly, I dreamed the other day that I was running bath water, and I rarely run bath water, but I dreamed the other day that I was running bath water, and then our dog that we keep in the backyard and generally don't allow in the house came in and jumped right in the bathtub and sat there. And I think I know the meaning of that dream. The meaning of that dream is that I'm going to bath up our dog and get her all cleaned up, and she's going to be able to stay in the house. And I shared that with Vonda, and she said it didn't come from God. Now, I love our dog. Vonda loves our dog outside. And so we're kind of trying to figure out, you know, well, where did this dream come from? Is this dream just coming out of my heart and my longing to have the dog inside? Or is this dream really coming from God? And see, dreams are kind of like that, where we realize, okay, the dreams must tell us something, but where's the message coming from? Is the message coming from God and God's trying to speak to us through the dream? Or is the dream really just kind of revealing what's in my heart? So the father, Jacob, is kind of thinking that I better, you know, I'm rebuking him for it, but I'm not going to forget that he had these dreams. And the brothers, they don't forget those dreams, but they sure don't want them to be from God. And they think it's just Joseph and his ego again. Well, look what happens next. The brothers take the flocks without Joseph, take the flocks to Shechem. There had been a bloodbath there. That's another story. But they take the flocks to Shechem. They're going to graze the flocks there. Eventually move on to Dothan. But look at verses 12 and 13 and 14. His brothers had gone to graze their flocks near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them. Okay, and you're thinking, what? But here is the father going to send his son, whom he loves, to the brothers who hate him. away from everything. Very well, he replied. So he said to him, go and see if all is well with your brothers. And you can just write in the word beside well there. It's the word peace. Okay, so hear the irony in this, that the brothers hate him so much that they cannot speak a word of peace to him. And here is the father going to send Joseph to his brothers to see if there is peace. Peace with the brothers, peace with the flock. There is no peace. And then return to me, bring word back to me. And of course, if you know the story, the return is not going to happen for a long time. So Joseph gets to Shechem. He can't find his brothers. They've moved even further away with the flock. So he goes after them. And so here we are down around verse 18. So Joseph went with his brothers and found them near Dothan, but they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. We don't know exactly how they recognized him in the distance, but presumably, as we will find, he's wearing his robe. And so no doubt they see that robe marking his significance. He's going to rub it in their face one more time as he comes out to them to ask them, do you guys have peace? While he's wearing his robe, they're ready to kill him. And so they plan it. And they got the whole thing plotted out that he's going to come, they're going to rip the robe off of him, and they're going to kill him. And then what are they going to do with the robe? Well, they're going to bloody it up and then make it look like a wild animal devoured Joseph. And they'll go home and put on the crocodile tears and say, our brother got killed today. We tried to save him, but all we could save was this robe. The plan is moving into action. And then verse 21, Reuben. And Reuben is the firstborn. He is the oldest. He is the one who is responsible, most responsible for all the brothers. And Reuben is the son of Leah. And so Reuben hears this and he tries to actually rescue Joseph from their hands. So he comes up with a plan. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Just throw him into this cistern, into this pit that's here in the desert. Don't lay a hand on him. And Reuben figured that he was buying time. That if he got Joseph thrown into the pit, at least he would be alive. It was dry. There's no water down there. Didn't need to worry about him drowning. And at some point, he would figure out a way to get him back home. Well, we don't know where Reuben went, but Joseph is in the pit, and do you notice what the other brothers are doing? They're breaking bread. They're having lunch. So here you got the brothers breaking bread together while one of the brothers, Joseph, is in a pit. I don't know. It would be kind of like having communion together, making sure that somebody in the church that we didn't like, that we hated, was somewhere outside, maybe tied up, maybe banned from us, maybe, I don't know, having to pick up trash, maybe chained to the gate out there. So we got them taken care of, good, we got them out of the church, and now we're going to break bread together and have communion together. I mean, it's that kind of irony that's going on here, where the very things that brothers should be doing together, they've made sure that one of the brother they hate, the brother they despise, the brother that deserves to be treated that way, is treated that way and in a pit and unable to be there and, you know. So they're breaking bread, and then they see some merchants coming by, and they come up with a plan. Judah comes up with a plan. And Judah says, I'm down at verse 26 now. Judah said to his brothers, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. Again, hear the irony in it. He's our brother, let's not kill him. He's our brother, let's sell him. The betrayal. And so they think that they they've got it worked out, that they can get rid of their brother without shedding his blood. They still aren't treating him like a brother, but they're not shedding his blood. And so they can be done with him. And the whole purpose too, notice that they not only wanted to get rid of their brother, but they also wanted to get rid of his dreams. And so look with me back to verse 20, when they first come up with their plan. Here comes that dreamer. Come now, let's kill him, throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. Very important, not simply to put a stop to Joseph, but to put a stop with his dreams, because if his dreams are true, then that means that God is against them, because the dreams would have come from God. But if they kill him and get rid of him, then they get rid of his dreams, which means even though their father favored him, at least they might be okay with God. So they think that they've taken care of everything. And they take him. Reuben can't believe that his plan went awry, that he's not able to rescue the boy. He tears his cloak. What's he going to say to Dad? How's he going to go home? So here's what they do, verse 31. So they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." And Jacob thinks his son Joseph is dead. And did you notice that the brothers hardly even had to lie? All they had to do was say, "We found this. Examine it. See if it's your son's." And Jacob looks at it, realizes it's that robe that he had given Joseph. It's covered with blood. It's torn up. And he interprets it and comes up with the very thing they wanted him to think, even though they didn't have to say it, that he's dead. A lot of irony here. You may or may not recall, but when the father here, Jacob, was a young man, he deceived his father, Isaac, with clothing, and now he's being deceived with clothing by his sons. And just as Jacob, the father, was the favored son of his mother, and we saw a family that was very kind of torn and split, we see so much of that passed on into this next generation. One more thing here, and then we'll try to step back from it a moment. Jacob is determined not to be comforted. Verse 35, all his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in mourning will I go down to the grave, down to Sheol, to my son." And so his father wept for him. And so never mind that he has 11 other sons, he's lost the one that he loved. And so he's going to go through life not being grateful for what he has. He's going to go through life grieving the loss of his favorite son. Do you hear what he's telling the others? "I still don't love you. The one that I loved is gone." What a messed up family. And then we get this last word, at least for this chapter. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. So, I don't know everything to do here. It sure is tempting to jump to the end, but I'm going to try not to. What becomes of Joseph's dreams? That's going to be the question. And if they were from God, what's God going to do? How is God going to work to bring the dreams to fulfillment now? Jacob thinks that Joseph is dead, and if Joseph is dead, the dreams are dead too. But Jacob, the dad, thinks that his son Joseph is dead. And so all he can do is grieve. The brothers, they know that Joseph is alive, but they think the dreams are dead. And so they feel like, it hits them every time they see their father crying that he still doesn't love them, but at least they're living with the knowledge, thinking the knowledge, that they don't have to bow down to Joseph. His dreams are dead. But what the narrator reminds us is that Joseph is down in Egypt and he's alive. And if Joseph is down in Egypt and he's alive, then maybe his dreams are alive too. And maybe God is at work here in some strange kind of way. There might be hope for this family and maybe even these dreams to come true. What a family. The jealousy, the strife, the favoritism, the rivalry, the hatred spilling out upon each other. And what a promise. Abraham, through your offspring, Isaac, through your descendants, Jacob, through your children, I'm going to bless all the families of the earth. I mean, if I'm God, I'm looking for a different family. This one? With this kind of jealousy passed on from generation to generation to generation? I mean, sometimes we might think that, okay, one generation is bad, but surely the next generation, God will get them back on track, and, you know, this was just kind of a speed bump. But what we see is that from generation to generation to generation, it intensifies and the family gets sicker and sicker and sicker. And yet God does not bail out on the promise that it's through this family that all the families of the earth will be blessed. Maybe one more way to think about this. One of the questions I like to ask, like to think about from time to time, is how human is Jesus? And I know our first response is that, well, he's fully human. And then I'll try to ask it again and think about it some more. Well, how human is being fully human? And the way I usually think about that, well, he was so human that he would get tired. He was so human that he would get thirsty. He was so human that he bled and he died. And that's pretty human. But maybe part of his humanity is that he's born into a family like this. You know, how human was Jesus? Well, look at his family. Because this is the family that Jesus is born into. And it tells us something about God and how God saves. That the way that God has chosen to save and to redeem humanity, to bless all peoples, is to actually enter into a particular family, as messed up as it is. And maybe this family in particular, because it's so messed up. And so God is going to enter into a family that is as human as any family ever was. And save. And you know that Jesus was rejected by this family, don't you? Jesus was born into this very family, and this family rejected him. And yet it's through Jesus that this family and all families are actually saved. And it humbles us. It leaves us in awe the way God works in coming to dwell amongst us to save us from within. And I guess if there's any one word I'd want to leave you with this morning, it would be that not to give up hope on the God who saves from within. It would have been very easy to give up hope on this family. By the time we get to the end of the story, we will see how God has worked. And it would be very easy to give up hope on this family extended over generations. And yet there's Jesus being born into the middle of this family. And it would be very easy to give up hope on the whole human race. And yet here is Jesus born into the middle of the human race to bring salvation, no matter how rejected he is. And it would be very easy to give up hope on our families. And the pain and the strife and the jealousies and the lack of peace and sins passed on from generation to generation to generation. So easy to give up hope. And yet, there's some kind of tagline on our own stories like there is here. And Joseph was sold down in Egypt and became a servant in Potiphar's house, the captain of the guard. And we may not know the rest of the story, but what we discover is that there's always a tagline, and in that tagline, there's plenty of space for God to work and for God to redeem and for God to save. We'll continue on working through this stuff over the next several Sundays. We're not going to try to rush to the end. We're going to try to take the journey. And part of why we're not rushing to the end is because we can't rush to the end of our own. And we have to learn to live and to hope where we have those taglines, and to keep the faith that God is at work redeeming in and through his son, Jesus.